It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Well, it is President's Day, so happy President's Day, especially if you are having the day off. Good for you. Takes time. Hopefully you're sleeping in late, and then you're going to wake up sometime around noon. Then you'll listen to the broadcast, while you're having your brunch or your lunch or something like that, just kind of chillaxing, having a fun time. I wanted to talk about something that has become very prevalent now in marketing, and it's kind of literally faking people in. And it is, people are buying fake followers, fake followers. So if you're, there's a place called Fiverr, that's Fiverr, Fiverr.com. There's a couple other places, and there's a couple other organizations where if you just type in the word buy followers, you can buy people to like your Twitter, follow you on Twitter or Facebook, LinkedIn, you just name it. And so basically it's kind of like stuffing your account to make it look bigger and better than it is. And I guess if you're trying to, what's the word I'm looking for? Maybe show off, I don't know. Maybe you're trying to build up your social proof. So your clients think that you're more popular or you're bigger than you are, right? Then, that is your call to make, but I want to warn people against it. And the reason for that is because, look, a lack of followers is a symptom of the amount of content you put out. Either A, you haven't put out enough content, B, your content isn't resonating with your audience, right? You can build a very good following. It just takes time. And the real key is just putting out good content, sharing it with your list, sharing it with your existing followers, asking your followers to share it with their people, and you start to build a list. It just, interestingly enough, I thought this was this is according to Google, via Google Chrome. For instance, Justin Bieber has roughly 40 million followers, and approximately 30% of Justin Bieber's followers are inactive, or you are inactive users or bots. So they're saying 40% are probably fake. That's interesting. All right. And so it's not the only one who have fake bots or fake people following their account. Again, don't do it. It's just going to look odd when nobody's liking your stuff or responding to you or interacting with you. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, 40% of 40 million, that's still a huge number of real people. I don't know what's going on there. But anyway, fake followers, don't do it. It's not good. It's not going to help you out. Nobody cares that much. All right, let's get it started. Francis Jackson is our first guest. He's one of our regular contributors. Francis Jackson is an attorney who specializes in disability law for those seeking veterans disability benefits and Social Security disability benefits. A founding partner of Jackson McNichol, he has been featured on NBC, CBS, Fox, ABC network affiliates around the country. He most recently appeared as a guest of Ben Glass on the Consumer Advocate Show discussing benefits for veterans and Social Security disability benefits and how his practice allows him to make a difference in the lives of people facing disabilities. He has been quoted in USA Today and is listed in Cambridge Who's Who. Mr. Jackson was honored by the National Academy of Best-Selling Authors with a Quillie Award in September of 2012. For his contribution as a joint author of the Amazon best-selling book, Protect and Defend, where he wrote about protecting one's rights to veterans' disability benefits and compensation. Francis Jackson, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thanks, Bert. Always a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. You know what? And I want to do a shout out to our veterans as well as to our current, enlisted men and women who are out there this holiday weekend. We celebrated Valentine's Day. They were on the front line. They were protecting us. They're around the world watching out for us. And so on this 3-day weekend, most of them are busting their butts. So a big shout out to our people there, our brave men and women who are protecting us and allowing us these wonderful holidays. And anyway, so that's it. I just wanted to do that because I think that, you know, Francis, you and I have a certain respect and love, for our fighting men and women, and that sometimes they are forgotten.
That's true, Bert.
All right, so let's talk about this real quick. Last time we were on the show, we talked about the challenges that some of our veterans have with getting an application started, and it used to be fairly simple where you could put on a piece of paper, you could fill out a form, you could go online, but they've taken that away, and now everything must be done online. Is that correct?
It doesn't have to be done live, Bert. It can be done live, or you can print the form off the internet and send it in, but you can no longer just send it in free form. That's the issue.
Gotcha. And I wanted to get your thoughts on this, because again, we've seen the headline a few times how literally boxes of files, hard copy files, were stored away. They weren't entered into a computer. They were just sitting there. And being ignored. And I kind of want to see what your thoughts are. Do you think we're getting better? Or when I say we, do you think Veterans Administration is getting better?
It is getting better, Bert. The fellow that's the new head of the compensation and pension section, Thomas Murphy, I guess maybe I shouldn't call him new now. He's been there 3-4 years, but he really has been working very hard to get the whole compensation pension system computerized, and so there's been some progress. I can't say it's been miraculous. There are still, as you and I've talked about, places where the Inspector General's team is still finding files stuck away in the corner and ignored. But by and large, there's been some significant progress. And, you know, part of that is just that there's been more political attention on veterans over the last few years for one reason or another, partly because the VA has gotten such bad press that Congress has really started focusing on them. But, you know, they are trying. I mean, you have to acknowledge that. Unfortunately, the biggest problem is people don't realize just how big the VA is. The Department of Veterans Affairs is huge. It is actually bigger than any other element of the government except the Department of Defense. It's larger than Social Security, for example, which is, as you know, a pretty big operation in itself. Turning something that size around is just a huge undertaking, and it's going to take some time. But McDonald seems to be trying hard to do the right thing from the top, and it's just a question of how long it takes to kind of trickle down. As you know, Congress has jumped in fairly recently and passed some legislation which made it a little easier for the VA to get rid of people who were not performing well. And there's a bunch of other recent legislation that actually has just passed the House, hasn't even gone to the Senate or been considered for enactment into law yet. But there's a fair amount of interest from Congress that's really, I think, spurred things along in the last year or two.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Today is President's Day, and I want to ask you the question, do we have a lot of presidents that were veterans as well?
Actually, surprisingly large number of our presidents have been veterans. there's some dispute in the various sources about some of the folks a ways back, but everybody agrees that about 31 of our presidents out of the 43 or 44 now have been veterans, and a large percentage of them have been combat veterans, 24 out of the group. And I'm sure you remember some of the more famous ones, obviously Washington, Andrew Jackson, Teddy Roosevelt, who was one of the Rough Riders in the Spanish-American War. But most of the people who have served a president have had some kind of military experience, and some have had very impressive military experience, like General Eisenhower, who became president. I mean, it's a surprisingly large group. I think it speaks well for the kind of selection and training that goes into establishing our armed forces.
Yeah, you know what? I think as Americans, we seem to really like our president's. I don't know. It seems like it bodes well for them, right? It's just extra sense of credibility when you have a president who's also served. You know, I was a little disappointed, not to go down this rabbit hole, but I was a little disappointed Trump had made a comment against McCain, saying that he didn't think McCain was a hero because he got caught, and he got caught and served in a UW camp for whatever it was, 7 years, and he didn't think that made him a hero. I just found that was interesting for two reasons. A, I don't believe he's ever heard a day in his life, and B, I don't know what else make. To me, that certainly is a not the only element of being a hero, but I think it's certainly one of them. When you survive a POW camp under those conditions, and then you come out and you build a life service, I don't know if that McCain, no matter what leanings are, is a true American hero.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more, Bert, and I thought Trump was really disrespectful toward veterans in saying that.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about this. Veterans Choice Healthcare, how is this new Veterans Choice Healthcare working out? What do you think?
Well, not very well so far. And as you know, the Veterans Choice Healthcare sprang out of the bad press that the VA got because of the huge waiting times at some of the hospitals, particularly the hospital in Arizona, but there were several others with similar problems where VA personnel were kind of fudging the list so that it didn't show up that they were not getting to people in a timely fashion. And that raised a fair amount of political heat, and Congress responded by passing this Healthcare Choice Act, which is supposed to let veterans get health care outside the VA system if they can't be seen within 30 days. But, it's sort of same old, same old. There's now a report out from the Inspector General that they checked on one hospital, and they were fudging the 30 days on the Veterans Choice Act. So you have to wonder sometimes, the experience around the country seems to be pretty mixed. I mean, some places it seems to be working all right. What they've done is they've hired a private contractor to administer this, and there've been some complaints that the contractor hasn't staffed it well and hasn't been responsive to veterans that have called in some places, and other places they seem to be doing reasonably well. It's just, I think part of it's, just setting up any large new program, it takes a while to shake down. But part of it's just that it's just big and clumsy. It's very hard to administer a program as big as the Department of Veterans Affairs and have it work smoothly everywhere. It's just a real challenge. McDonald seems to be making some headway, but it's hard to know if they'll ever get it really right.
Yeah. It is a shame. And like you said, it's such a big department. And unfortunately, you know, you and I have discussed this, where you have no accountability in some cases. McDonald wanted to fire a bunch of these guys who were doing a poor job, and he found out he couldn't. And when you can't get fired, I don't care how good of a person you are, when you have no accountability or minimal accountability, sooner or later, it's just human nature, you're going to back off.
I think that's true, Bert, and it is a problem. Unfortunately, it's, as you know, a problem in other parts of the government as well, but the VA is so big that it gets more than its share of examples.
Sure.
And they've gotten some fairly spectacular ones, as you know.
All right, so speaking of politics, what do you think? What's on the political horizon for our Veterans Administration?
Well, you know, that's kind of a mixed bag. The president have just proposed a fairly significant increase in the budget for the VA this year. I think he's asking for $5 billion more than last year. Nobody knows what will happen with the budget this time around. As you know, there's an election coming up, and it's just it's anybody's guess how that'll fare. But he at least has asked for more money for some of the things that they really need, including funding for the Veterans Choice Care Act and funding for the ongoing computerization efforts, and you know, we'll just have to see. But that, as I kind of touched on a couple minutes ago, the House has really been kind of focused on the VA. The chairman of the Veterans Committee in the House, Jeff Miller from Florida, has really been very outspoken about problems at the VA and has pushed some legislation. And just before the recent recess on Tuesday, the House approved a whole bunch of veterans-related bills. One of them is the Construction Reform Act, which would put an assistant inspector general directly overseeing the handling of the expenditures on all new VA construction. And that's bound to be a good thing. You probably remember that several new VA facilities have had just enormous cost overruns. I mean, like 50% and 60%. I mean, crazy percentages over the already large numbers that they were slated for, which has been a huge issue. There's been another a bill in the House that would clean up veterans' benefits in the education side, requiring that, unlike the present system, any school that wants to be approved for veterans' benefits would have to be appropriately certified, which is not true now, amazingly enough. There's also a special bill that just passed the House. Again, I think this is primarily pushed by Representative Miller, but it's called the Failing VA Medical Center Recovery Act, and it would require the VA to assign a special management team to any VA hospital facility that's not meeting the performance standards, to really push them. And I think that's certainly a good thing. The problem is it's kind of, you're sort of getting to the level where Congress is trying to micromanage an already difficult department, and I don't know how well that's going to work out in practice. But that particular item, it seems to me, will probably at least help some. The one that's probably nearest and dearest to my heart is that they just passed the Female Veteran Suicide Prevention Act, which is intended to give more oversight and benefits for suicide prevention for female veterans, which is very high, I'm sorry to say. And so hopefully that will bring about a significant improvement. The other one that's probably most of interest to veterans with disability issues is the American Heroes COLA Act. And what that does...
American Heroes COLA Act, okay.
Yep, yeah. You know about COLAs, or cost of living increases in Social Security. Well, what this would do is it would tie veterans benefits to the same cost of living allowance as in Social Security, so that rather than having the VA kind of periodically decide they're going to get around to doing a cost of living allowance, this would tie it to the same standard as Social Security, so that every year that there's a Social Security COLA, there would be a COLA for veterans getting benefits, and it would be automatic, so you wouldn't have to have the extra step of the VA going through and deciding their own separate system. It would be essentially automated. It would come off the computerized program that they use for Social Security COLAs. So that's probably the one of the, if you will, widest impact for those veterans dealing with the disability compensation system.
Gotcha. Let's talk about this real quick. Why do vets need lawyers? I mean, aren't they entitled to getting these benefits? I mean, shouldn't our government, shouldn't it be just as easy as our being able to look up and say, oh, Francis Jackson, I see you, sir, our country, fully on the, from this time to this time, I see that you served our country, here are your benefits.
Well, Berg, it actually works pretty much that way for some things. The VA is really good about dealing with people who have clear, documented injuries. If you were in the service and you served in, say, in Iraq, and you were unfortunate enough to be present when one of those roadside bombs went off and you lost a leg, the VA is very good about they can see that, they can understand it, they can rate it, they take care of those just fine. The real problem is you get the guy who was in the same vehicle and wasn't physically injured but has what's called a traumatic brain injury, meaning basically you got a concussion, it bounces your brain around inside your skull and causes some damage, and it's not as readily observable. You can still kind of walk and talk. You're just not as good as you were. And it's harder for the VA to kind of see and rate those kinds of claims. And what happens is that claims that aren't easy to understand and rate kind of get pushed to the back of the pile. I'm sure we've all seen, if you have five tasks to do and a limited amount of time to do them, and you want to get as many done as you can, you do the easy ones. And the harder ones kind of go to the side. Well, it's the same with rating at the VA. And so when you get one of these that's not obvious, then those are the folks who kind of go to the back of the bus, and they're the ones who end up with appeals, and those are the folks who really need help, because a lot of times the VA just either doesn't have the time or doesn't take the time to dig into the information and find all the necessary information to rate those cases. And, it's complicated, and complicated stuff, just goes to the bottom of the pile.
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head. Complicated stuff goes to the bottom of the pile. And like you said, this is complicated stuff. You're dealing with human beings who are under pressure and, they don't know how to deal with something complicated. So this is where you guys step in and help somebody uncomplicate things, or at least maybe, I don't know if that's the right word, navigate complicated water here. The other thing that I was amazed is that a veteran must be denied first before he can hire an attorney.
Yeah. It's sort of a crazy system. As you may remember, Bert, for many years, you could hire an attorney, but you could only pay them $10. And when they first enacted that statute right after the Civil War, $10 in gold wasn't a bad fee. People were pretty happy with that. but by 1980, $10 didn't really go very far. So in 88, the Congress finally got themselves together and enacted a bill creating the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims and allowing a different compensation system. At that time, you not only had to get turned down initially by the VA, but you had to take your case to the Board of Veterans Appeals in Washington, get turned down there. And then you had just a one-year window from the date of that denial to hire an attorney. But in 2006, they finally changed the law so that now once you get turned down by the VA initially, you can finally hire an attorney. But it's interesting you mention that because, as far as I know, this is the only agency in the entire government where you can't hire an attorney to help you with a claim right from the beginning. But that's the rule here. You can't pay anybody to help you in the beginning. So
yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. That's why, and I think that's probably why, I don't know. It's like if they would allow that, and I, in one hand, I understand why they do. On the other side, if they allow that, maybe more claims wouldn't be denied, and maybe more people would be helped quicker.
You would think so. I mean, I think that's right, Bert. But you never know. What we do know is that the VA's own statistics show that people with attorneys get higher rates of approval and remand at the Board of Veterans Appeals, and that overall they end up with higher benefit payments on average, about 40% higher than those who are not represented. So, you know, it does make a difference. And so if you have a complicated claim, you're usually well advised to get help.
Absolutely. Francis Jackson, thank you so much for stopping by. If you are a veteran, if you are a family member of a veteran, if you just know a veteran, let them know about Jackson-McNichol, MacNichol.com. Get some help. Get them some help. This is something that you can do for your veterans, your family, your friends. And Francis Jackson, always good to talk to you, my friend.
My pleasure, Bert. You take care now.
All right. Good stuff there from Francis Jackson on your disability compensation, your veterans' disability compensation. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. We are back. My next guest, Daisha Kissel. Daisha is a global nomad living and working around the world with people who are already shining their light in the world. She began helping others organize their homes and lives 10 years ago. Along the way, she introduced life coaching service to support clients' life transformation in a deeper way. Now she's combining those pieces to help people connect to their deeper purpose. Living a life with mind, heart, and action aligned is what inspires her clients and is the core motivator of The Steps, a formula for executing your passion. You can find out more about Daisha at elementsofevolution.com. Elementsofevolution.com. Daisha, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert. Thanks so much. I'm glad to be here with you.
I'm excited to have you here. Here you are, a nomad like that. You don't find many nomads now. all right, so,
yeah.
So tell us about your story. How did you end up in Ecuador helping people shine in their life?
Well, yeah, I started off as an organizer for people who were feeling overwhelmed in their life and in their homes, and I started quickly realizing that our lives are a lot more about our stuff and it's really more about what's in our hearts and what we're really here in our lives to express. And so I was really compelled to get a little bit deeper into that, so I started adding life coaching and kind of went down the rabbit hole of finding my own passion, which was for me also about living internationally and being able to travel as well as work with people that really wanted to live their sort of highest purpose in their life. So I realized that actually being a digital nomad and living internationally was possible along with working with people on Skype. And so the two bridged hand in hand, and now I, after living in several different countries, I'm now in Ecuador. And just talking with people about really what it means for them in their highest idea of their life, what does that really look like, what's possible.
Now, is Ecuador now going to be your home?
No, actually, I'm probably going to be leaving here in a couple of weeks. Normally, I live places for 2 to 3 months, and I've actually been here for almost 9 months now. Ecuador is amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so, I mean, really, I feel like for all of us nowadays, we're at this time in the world that so much is possible. You know, we have a lot of options available, and for so many of us, the only thing that blocks us is our own beliefs about what's possible. So under that
absolutely,
umbrella, really,
absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree with you. I think that you look at somebody who had no reason to succeed, but they just happened to believe in themselves, and they just didn't know it was possible or impossible to do this great thing, and they go and do it.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
And
I do a lot
of business. I was going to say, on the opposite side of that, you have somebody who's been giving all the breaks in life. He's got money, he's got connections, he's gone to all the great schools, he's got everything that most of us think that's going to help you in life, and they can't make their way out of a paper bag.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's really about this combination of our minds, our hearts, and the action, those three components lining up. Because, yeah, if we're just logically living, oh, okay, I need to make this money or this is what I'm supposed to do in my life, but your heart isn't in it, that doesn't work. Or if it's only just this dreamy life that you want to have, but your mind and the logical steps of how to get there aren't supporting that, you know. Or if your action isn't, if you're not stepping up to actually sort of take the steps that needs to happen, we need the balance of all three, right?
Yes, no, I agree. Hey, let's talk about your program called STEPS. First of all, what is STEPS? Let's walk me through this.
Okay, so the STEPS is really for people who have the dream, they know what they want to do in their life, and they're not exactly sure what steps to take to get them there in terms of making it into a business and making it actually financially stable for them. And so the STEPS is a series, it's 9 steps in a row to really break down the pieces to making your dream, your purpose, your life purpose come into fruition. And it's sort of like an artist that has an idea of what they want to paint, but not necessarily having all of the paintbrushes or the colors of paint that they need. So the steps just breaks it down into bite-sized pieces so that we're really looking at what components are necessary for you to take your idea into fruition. And getting clear on each step. Like, for example, a lot of people have an idea of something that they say, okay, my life's purpose, my dream is to really be a jewelry maker or something like that. And it's easy to jump just to the place of, okay, how do I market this? Or how do I just want to tell everybody that's what I do, but they're not sure about how they're going to be collecting the money or these kind of step-by-step grounded pieces that it takes to execute something like your purpose in the world.
Gotcha. All right, so the, let me just ask you, what do you think are the three most important parts of living? I mean, you mentioned what, the heart, mind, and action, right?
Yeah, the heart, mind, and action.
So, Okay, so, and I agree with you. Why do you think as humans have a problem aligning these things?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Bert. I mean, so much of the way that we're brought up in the world right now is about what we should do. And there's a lot of pieces that are necessary for our lives to run, right? Like, okay, well, we need a certain amount of money to make this happen, or our lives have this consistent structure that it's hard to imagine a way out of it. And so I think that it's so easy for us to just get caught in this logical, okay, I'm supposed to live my life in this one way because this is what I'm told. Like, college is a great example. Okay, everybody needs to go to college to, you know, get a good job to make the money they need to make. And we are just living in a new time now. It really is different for people. And now, if you want to know about something, you can go to YouTube, right? And get a whole.
Get a whole you don't need to go to college. Just go to YouTube.
I mean, it's just so out of the box at this point. You know, it's like I think the internet and just there are so many possibilities that are happening for us right now. At the same time that we're meeting the world, you know, a lot of people are really struggling now too, and we're seeing a need for change on a lot of levels as well, because, you know, where people are looking like, how can I have a life that's actually sustainable? And not only sustainable for myself, but like sustainable for the whole planet. And so what's happening now is people are changing and they're starting to really look at their lives. One of the exercises that I do with people is have everybody just take a deep breath and close their eyes and visualize a TV screen in front of them. And on the TV screen, up pops the show, and the show is actually of their life. And they can sit for a few minutes and just get a little bit of space from their life and watch it happen on the TV screen. And as they're watching it, they can ask themselves, you know, is this in alignment with my mind? Am I mentally on board with this life? Is my heart on board with this life? Is there any parts of my heart that are not on board that I really need to invite into my life now? And am I taking the actions that I want to be taking in my life to make this alignment happen? What's missing? And so after taking a couple of deep breaths with that, even to take it a step further, we can also check in and say, does this align with our whole planet? Where do I fit in? Because the key is that we all are such unique human beings and we all have these gifts to bring. And what happens is that when we block one of these three parts, not only are we doing a disservice to ourselves, but we're doing a disservice to the whole world. Like, it's time for everybody to step up now and shine their light.
Yeah. No. Well, you know what? And interesting enough, I think that part of that issue, I don't know if that's the right word, but, you know, the challenge with shining your light is that, you know, first, as a small child, everything you do is fantastic, right? You're praised continually. And somehow, in between junior high and high school, you're seldom praised. And then you're from all these other people. Most people have the tools or the self-esteem, you know. And so by the time you're coming out of high school, you're down quite a bit. And so shining your light is something that most people are not comfortable doing.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be terrifying, really.
It is, yeah. I think it is. And I think that's why so many people don't really start shining their light at like 40 or 50 when they've had enough and they realize, you know, screw you, or you know, when I say screw you, I mean screw everybody else, right? I no longer care about your opinion. I'm going to shine my light. I'm gonna stop being a doctor or a lawyer or a plumber or whatever. I'm going to write music. I'm gonna do what I really truly want to do.
Yeah, yeah. Can you imagine a world where everybody did that?
Yeah, that would be incredible thing. Anyway, listen, I apologize. I feel we're out of time. I'd love to get back and talk more on how we can help to speak. And Dacia, it's been a blast. Like I said, we'll have you again. We'll talk more about steps and helping people find their light.
Thank you, Bert. Thank you so much for doing what you're doing, too. I mean, this is you're a microphone for people, so it's a beautiful job that you have.
Thank you so much. All right, good stuff there from Dacia about shining your light, and I like that. It's really that simple. You align your mind, your heart, and wait a minute. What was the other one? We got to get it. You know, it was mind, heart, and action. Oh, my gosh. How can you forget action? You got to do it. There's no way around the whole action. All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah. I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. Good stuff so far. Hope you guys are enjoying your 3-day weekend. And we're going to, what do you call it, hopefully adding value. Hopefully adding some stuff to your 3-day weekend. That I meant to say. You know, I want to apologize. I'm a little out of it because my segment producer had a what do you call it, an emergency, and so she usually helps stay on a tighter schedule, but she had to deal something with her kids, and so I'm slightly behind schedule. I apologize to our listeners, and I have to play one more commercial to get us up and running, get us caught up, and then we'll be right back.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick. Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing. You sound awful.
How could I resist?
Look. I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
All right. Thursday off. Always good. My next guest, Dan Melman. Dan is a return guest. I fell in love with Dan and his book a while back. The book, he's written a lot of books, but the book in question is Four Purposes of Life. Dan Melman, a former world champion athlete, university coach, martial arts instructor, and college professor, has authored 16 books published in 21 languages. His best known book, The Way. Oh, it's called Way of the Peaceful Warrior. You guys probably are familiar with that one. It was released as a film starring Nick Nolte by Universal Pictures in 2007. A popular international speaker, Dan has influenced people from all walks of life. You can learn more about his work at peacefulwarrior.com. Dan Melman, welcome back.
Hi, Bert. Glad to be here with you.
Absolutely. It's always good. Always good to have you here. And you know what? I've been reading the book, and it is a phenomenal book. It really, really has a lot of provocation there. It really makes you examine what you're doing.
Well, that's its purpose, so to speak.
So it's working.
Yes.
Oh, man. All right, so let's talk about this. I want to get into, well, you know what? For our audience who's not aware of Four Purposes life of the book. Give us a quick synopsis. What was the motivation or the catalyst for you writing this book?
Well, having written as many books as I have, I focused on certain themes I thought would exert the most positive leverage in people's lives. And it struck me some time ago that what we're looking for is not merely happiness or whatever that represents. We're looking for meaning and purpose and connection. So I've written several books dealing with this sense of purpose. And the four purposes of life puts the pieces of the puzzle together in the context not only of my work, but what we're here to do and what we're doing here. And so I asked myself, okay, if what is the purpose of life? And it turned out there isn't a purpose. There are as many purposes as people. But just as we can divide the points on a compass into four directions and the days of the year into four primary seasons, Bert, it seemed to me that four purposes stand out to help us to get a kind of map to what we're doing in everyday life. And if it would help, I can certainly summarize to give the context of these four different purposes.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. The first purpose sounds pretty mundane when you first hear it, learning life's lessons. People go, yes, I know that, Dan. You know, we learn from our life experience. I know more now than I did when I was a teenager, let's say, or a child. But there's actually much more to it. I'm suggesting in this first section of the book, the first purpose, that Earth is like a perfect school, a divine school, and daily life is our classroom. In other words, daily life is guaranteed to teach us everything we need to learn to evolve and grow and improve as human beings. People were evolving before books and seminars, so no one has to read my books or attend a seminar, mine or anyone else's, in order to keep evolving, because our relationships, our financial challenges, our career decisions force us to start to know ourselves. Life is a form of spiritual weightlifting, and if you don't lift any weights, you don't get any stronger. So people ask me, well, then why do you write books and teach seminars if you don't need, if daily life is going to teach you everything you need? Because a good book, good reminder from any source can shed some light and help us to learn the lessons of everyday life more gracefully and with a little less pain. Because we've noticed, most of us, that lessons repeat themselves until we learn them. And if we don't learn the easy lessons, they get more dramatic. First, life throws a ping pong ball, then a bowling ball. So that's...
then a wrecking ball.
Yes, exactly. So that's why the first purpose is so important. It's the one we all share. But it helps us to appreciate daily life isn't just a drudgery we have to get through, solving one problem after the next. It is the very means of our personal evolution and growth. It's a path or a way. And if we treat it as that, we begin to appreciate these little adversities we face, and sometimes big ones, but we appreciate the gifts that they have, that they contain, in terms of, you know, if we look back on our lives and the difficulties and challenges we've overcome, we're a little bit stronger, a little bit wiser, maybe even a bit more compassionate for having gone through those difficulties. So that's why I talk about the gift of adversity in that first section and many other things. It's a small book, as you've seen, 150 pages, but there's a lot in it, including the 12 courses we're all here to graduate. We need to pass in order to graduate. So quite a bit in that first section. It's not just saying, yes, we learn from our life experience.
Right. You know what? One of the things that I want to point out, that sometimes we, quote, want to avoid problems and challenges, and your book makes this abundantly clear that this is one of our purposes, is to get better. You know, you, like you said, you learn this lesson and you move on to the next lesson. You know, it's... to me, if you think that, you know, there's an old adage, you know, I was something along the lines that, you know, I was complaining about having no shoes until I met a young boy that didn't have any feet, right?
So, right, right.
Sometimes the quality of our problems kind of indicate the quality of our life. So, you know, you could have a problem of, you know, I had to fix my 10-year-old car. Yeah, that is a problem. But our job is to get better problems. Maybe, you know, to get a 5-year-old car or a brand new car or whatever. You know, so really, one of the challenges that we are meant to, or one of the lessons that I think that we're supposed to learn is, really, we're supposed to up-level our problems. You know, that's kind of my understanding,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. In fact, that's probably why St. Augustine, many centuries ago, said, I pray not for a lighter load, but for stronger shoulders, because those higher level problems create a higher level person. In fact, in that first section, in Learning Life's Lessons, in the Four Purposes, the first purpose emphasizes that we even take on adversity. I call it voluntary adversity. For example, anyone who's done a sport, played sports or played a musical instrument, life is easier without doing that. But we've taken it on because intuitively we know we're going to grow through that process. Another form of voluntary adversity is maintaining an intimate relationship or having children or being involved with business. All these are things that will help us. They are part of our path. So I don't think we're here in life just to make life easy. We're here to grow those stronger shoulders.
Well, you know what? And here's what I found. In business, I'm just going to apply this to business. You tend to want to hire the person with the most experience, the most confidence, right? The person who's got the most skills. Well, how do you get those things? Well, by solving a bunch of problems, by dealing with all this adversity, by going through these required courses, as you refer to them, right? Once we've mastered this, then we go on and go on and go on. I mean, it's just ultimately, you know, we are, as humans, supposed to happily achieve versus achieve and then be happy.
I totally agree. It's well put. When we begin, we're calling tech support, and eventually we realize we are tech support.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. I love that. All right. So listen, let's talk about this. The second chapter in the book, the second purpose, is finding your career and calling. And I think this is one of those areas that everybody needs to go and get this book, because I think this is something that is such a things that we forget. Talk a little bit about your story, you know, in finding your career and calling, you know, where you went from different little things. You were working at one point as a writer and then a telemarketer while you were trying to, this position at a university, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
Yes, I had a really winding path, so I can speak about with some empathy about the changes. You know, in our 20s, we call them the trying 20s because we try this, then we try that, then we try that. I thought I was living a charmed life. After trying life insurance for a couple months in Los Angeles after graduating from college, I realized I didn't really want to be in LA anymore. It was great for some people, and life insurance wasn't really going to be work for me, though it's great for other people. And so I ended up, I lucked out. I got the head coaching job at Stanford University when I was 22 years of age because of my strong background in gymnastics. That lasted 4 years. I loved it. Then I got offered a professorship at Oberlin College in Ohio. I went off to college to be a professor there. After 3.5 years, for various reasons, I returned to California. Then the bottom dropped out. I worked as a typist. I was fired from one job. I painted houses for a while. And I was a fitness coach for a while. I tried many things until I finally started plugging away at writing a book. And that book eventually, by word of mouth, started spreading. And then I wrote another one, and I found my own way, as we all do. Francis Bacon said, "We rise to great heights by a winding staircase." And I think the key that I learned and that I emphasize in the section on finding our career and calling is self-knowledge, because young people haven't tested themselves against the world sufficiently to really know what are their values, their talents, and their interests. And unless we know that, we end up making the right choice for the wrong person, the one we thought we were. And so in that chapter, I go into the importance and how to start to know ourselves. In fact, self-knowledge, that's really a key to the third purpose in the four purposes of life. It's a more mysterious process, but very effective. One of my best-selling books is called The Life You Were Born to Live. And I summarize the key elements in that third purpose in the book, which is finding our hidden calling, our life path. And it really is, it makes a huge leap in understanding ourselves, our values, our talents, and our interests so that we can make wiser choices for ourselves, not only in work, but in relationships and so on as well. So one purpose leads into the next. One prepares us for the next. I also emphasize the difference between career and calling. In brief, Bert, our career is about making an income. Now, that may, we may like a lot of things about our career. We may like the people we work with, but the key to a career is producing an income to achieve independence, to support ourselves and our families. Whereas a calling, when we're told, do what you love and the money will follow, that may be true, but it may not. Because doing what we love is about pursuing our calling. And it's wonderful to have a calling. And sometimes oh, you know what? hold on. Yes. You know, I realized, Bert, that I have to call from London. I have to take our interview was a little bit later, so I have to take.
Well, it's my fault today, guys. I ran behind. So you know, what we'll do, Dan, is we'll reschedule our time, and then we'll get into it. We'll do an extended version for everybody. Dan Millman, thank you so much for stopping by.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Buddy. Good stuff there for Dan Millman. If you haven't done it yet, you need to go out and get his book, The Four Purposes of Life, and it'll blow your mind. I apologize to everybody today for being a little out of it, but my segment producer, Amy, I had a family emergency with her son, so the best of luck to both of them. And as always, guys, you were put on this planet to succeed, not to be miserable, not to be mediocre. Go and get this book, The Four Purposes of Life. Dan has a couple of other books that are incredible. I love the way he writes and the way he thinks. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.